confronting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, along with Vicki Davis, here with you on this 30th of December 2017, the final show of 2017, as we move toward 2018 here next week. It's nice to have you with us once again, ladies and gentlemen, as we document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy, and a lot of fun here in southern Michigan with all the snow going on. Vicki Davis is on the line, and we were talking just before we came on the air about the climate change. And Vicki, I could use a little bit of climate change here right now as we're being pounded with snow. I'm watching here as the snow blows off my roof. We've just gotten pummeled. Absolutely pummeled this week.
Oh, well, it's been freezing cold here, too. We had a dusting of snow. There's still some snow in the yard, but it is cold.
We get all this lake effect stuff. Until the lakes freeze over, what happens is the wind blows across the surface of the lake, and until the lake freezes over, the water is evaporating into the air. And so When it reaches that cold air, which probably doesn't take very long because it's probably cold down on the surface, sometimes it could be, you know, cold air aloft. So it doesn't even necessarily have to be, well, when it comes down, it's got to be pretty cold. Anyway, the wind blows across the surface of the lake, causing evaporation, and then it comes down and the moisture crystallizes and comes down in the form of snow. So we, you know, West Michigan, I wouldn't live over there. I don't know how they do it. I talked to, we had one of our engineers go over there and live for a while. And I think Grand Rapids, I think, is where he was living. And he was not happy at all. He was constantly having to unbury himself. We get enough here in the middle of the state, the central part of southern Michigan, that I don't think I'd want any more than what we get. But the lake effect is what's killing us right now.
Yeah, that's not fun. Seems like it just makes it about twice as cold as what it really is.
Yeah, and our temperatures out here, and we consistently seems like we're often, whatever they say the official temperature is at the airport, which is, the airport's about 15 minutes. We got an airport in Reynolds, in Jackson, and that's about 15 minutes from my location. And whatever their official temperature is there, it tends to be about, I'd say, roughly 10 degrees lower here out in the country. And we've been having, you know, like one night, I think it got down, it was 15 degrees below zero easily. And then it might have been more than that, but I mean, with the wind chill, I'm sure it was more than that. So it's been quite a tough winter so far, and it's just getting started. If the entire thing has, you know, looks like this and feels like this, it's going to be rough. We've got a long way to go.
Yep.
Anyhow, so I was poking around on the Organization for American States website just last night. And I noticed that they have the International Migrants Day on December 11th. So they're promoting that whole migrant thing. Another thing I noticed, and they also had the a campaign that they've launched on the same day called Migrants Count in the Americas. I wonder if this has anything to do with a response to the Trump administration. Migrants Count in the Americas.
Yeah, I have no doubt about that.
There's also an interesting organization, or a part of that organization, and I don't think people ever pay enough attention to the Organization of American States. I look at this organization as our European Union. Now they
well, it is actually. In the I have a timeline that was done of the North American Union, and a lot of the activity with South America, with Mexico, it's not just Mexico, it's South America, you know, and what, of course, what they're trying to do is to create a regional commercial zone. That they tried to call it a community here, you know, the North American community,
mm-hmm.
but that didn't fly. We were not fooled. It's a common market, just like they created in the European Union. And what it is a regional governing structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the globalist plan is to manage big trading bloc areas.
You know, I wonder why it didn't fly. You said it didn't fly here, but and I know they tried to do it covertly here versus very openly over in the EU. Why is that? Do we care more about national sovereignty over on the in the West than the European Union people, or, you know, the people in Europe?
I do believe so, yes. And we care about it even more in the Western West, our part of the United States, than
true.
They do in the Eastern part.
Yeah. With the like, with
you know, if
exceptions.
You, there's one guy, I don't know if you know who Jason Goodman is. He
no.
is a Truth Media operating out of New York City. And he did a program, and I put a comment down in his, you know, underneath the video, and I said, look at Agenda 21. And he was in a subsequent broadcast. He had some guy from San Diego, which is the worst place to ask anybody about Agenda 21 because they are totally, they've been taken over.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't know anything about it, and you know they just kind of blew it off as if it's not important.
You say this guy was a patriot broadcaster, or
well, Jason Goodman is the guy that he had on from San Diego. I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're going to talk about Agenda 21,
I thought everybody in the movement now knows about Agenda 21. I mean, years ago when we started, they didn't, but. It's been so published and talked about now, I thought everybody was pretty much up to speed on that. Apparently not.
It's like that's why I prefaced this by saying that Jason Goodman is from New York City.
Hmm.
And so...
Well, just in case anybody out there doesn't know, the brief backgrounder on that, Agenda 21 is United Nations Blueprint for Sustainable Development. And they define sustainable development as this generation's ability to meet its needs without compromising future generations' ability to meet their needs, which sounds an awful lot like Marx's from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. The key word there is needs. That's all you're going to have is the basic, if you have that, by the way. The idea of Agenda 21, it's an economic program as well as an environmental program. And it's designed to redistribute wealth from wealthy individuals and wealth. You know, well, let me quantify that or qualify that. Wealthy individuals, meaning the middle class, predominantly the upper middle class, the super wealthy. Let's face it, folks; they're always going to have their money. In fact, they're largely the ones doing all of this. But it's designed to redistribute wealth from the industrialized nations, like the United States, to the so-called developing nations, which is the impoverished, poor nations worldwide. And with the whole thing comes this whole technocratic thing where they have to database everything you do, because the idea is you can't manage an economy and manage resources of the planet without having a bunch of data points that you can plug in and get information out about where everything, where the consumption is and where the production is.
Well, my big news of the day, actually my big news of the year, is that the plan, the planning of Agenda 21 began with the transportation system that was announced in 1990. And if you follow the legislation, all the plans, it's all there, including sustainable development and energy, the energy conservation. It's all there. So anybody that and what it really is, it's sustainable wealth for the wealthy, while they drop everybody else into a third world standard of living.
Exactly.
Monitored and controlled by high technology.
Absolutely. And that's why all the smart meters are going up everywhere, which, by the way, for the fifth time, I've run off this power company. My brother-in-law caught them trying to come out here. My daughter ran them off one time. My wife ran them off one time, and I ran them off one time. So we're taking turns running the power company off because they're very aggressive in their efforts to try to switch out this meter out here. I think they're trying to
control of the electric grid, and everybody's consumption of electricity is absolutely essential to their plan.
Yeah, and that's what it's really about, is about making your power bills so expensive that you can't afford to do anything that you wouldn't, that, you know, luxurious or anything. Basically, you just keep everything off because you don't dare not have everything off. My father-in-law likes Christmas lights, and he doesn't put Christmas lights. He's talking about running a generator to power his Christmas lights for a couple hours a night. I mean, this is how ridiculous it is, but he can't afford the power bill. It went up $300 for him when they switched out his power meter.
There is an underground, a hidden funding mechanism, hidden tax, I would say, extraction method built into the electric grid and into the smart meter system. I think we talked about those renewable energy credits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the Department of Energy website, I saw a portfolio standard for Hawaii. Okay, and what the requirement is for Hawaiian utilities is that they, over a period, by the year 2045, all of their electricity is supposed to be generated by renewable methods, renewable energy methods. So what that does is that it causes the utility companies to have to restrict your use of electric power. And one of the ways that they restrict your use is by raising the price.
Well, it's really easy to raise the price when you're being, and this is the thing that a lot of people don't realize, I think. There is the whole idea of the smart meter, even if the things were reading correctly, and I don't think they do. In fact, that MIT study that doesn't get talked about nearly enough. I did a Periscope on this subject, which you can find on Twitter. If you go to my twitter.com/governamerica and click on Moments, I talked about this in a video on Periscope when I was at. I just gotten out of a Capitol meeting on these smart meters, our opt-out bill here in Michigan, which is unfortunately dying in committee. But the MIT study is very important because they got a bunch of these meters in there and they examined them and determined that these smart meters, because of atmospheric noise, they will frequently misread. And so you can have a spike in usage in these smart meters and have your power bill go up because it's not accurately recording usage. Now that's point number one. But even if they are reading correctly, you've got the problem then of having to deal with the fact that your old analog meters, they would record everything in aggregate. where the smart meters actually bill you, it breaks down the billings per hour of usage, you know, probably even to, down to the minute, I'm sure. But
down to the minute.
It can determine exactly when you're using it, and that gives the utility companies the ability to then charge like the old phone companies used to charge, where if you're using something at a peak hour, it can charge you more because you're using it at a peak hour. And that whole thing is behavioral modification. That's social engineering. That is exactly what I think this whole thing, you know, these are designed for in the first place. I've always called them Agenda 21 enforcement meters because it's designed to change human behavior.
But it's even worse.
Okay.
It's even worse than that. They can map your whole life by the smart meters.
Well, right.
And I'm not sure if we're talking about the same MIT study, but what MIT found was that each device in your house, when it flips on, there is an electronic signature that device makes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you flip on a light switch, there is an electronic signature that is created for that light. And, you know, through analysis of time of day and so forth, you know, they can map just everything you're doing in your house.
Exactly. Well, I've called it Santa Claus without the presents. They know when you're sleeping. They know when you're awake. You know, they know everything about your life.
Gone on vacation and your home is vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If the feds want to raid, all they have to do is wait for a time when your smart meter indicates a dormancy in usage.
Or the dark side.
The dark side?
If there are gangs of criminals.
Then
they do use gangs of criminals.
Well, and let's not forget, I mean, let's forget about the feds for a moment. And let's talk about the hackers. If somebody wants to burglarize your house, maybe they'll hack your smart meter first to find out when you're not home. How's that?
That's right.
You know, in an age when we have cybersecurity all the time, you know, we hear all these congressional committees and panels, cybersecurity, the Russians are hacking everything. What are we going to do? North Korea is going to wipe us out through the cyber. And yet we have this situation here where everything's being shoved to the grid, to the Internet of Things. How stupid is this?
But you know what? It's not the Russians, it's the Chinese. The
yeah.
Chinese are the ones that are building all these renewables.
Well, let's be real about this. If the Russians aren't involved in the cyber realm, they're falling down on the job. You know?
Oh, well, I'm sure they are.
Everybody, every country uses the tools that are available to them.
Sure. But the Internet of Things, China has a database of the electronic signatures of devices.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out about that just kind of accidentally when a friend of mine sent me a contract that the state of Oklahoma was considering signing with a company to produce an inventory of all of their equipment. And they had to put a special device on, you know, their wall. But, you know, the technical details of how they would do that was very intriguing to me. And I didn't realize it. I don't think I knew at the time about the MIT study that records, that can tell what the device is that just went on. I mean, they can even tell you the brand and the make. Because the signatures are different.
Yeah. Well, and when they get these cards and all the appliances, that's the other thing. They don't even have to rely upon the signatures when the new smart appliances come along with these cards. You know, I remember, well, I don't remember because I wasn't really around back then. But I remember hearing about it when they first put in the power grid, when they did the electrification, including the rural electrification. Everybody in the rural areas especially were saying, I can't wait until I get lights. It was about the lights. And that was all that was involved with that, I think, was just the lights. But as the technology was around for a while, people, you know, manufacturers, what have you, decided, you know, hey, we could use this for other purposes. And so along comes the electric motor and vacuum cleaners and other appliances until you have all this stuff built upon the technology. So that's the way it works. Right now, you have these smart meters, but eventually they'll have technologies that are, that connect to that, that build upon what's there. And everything, all the new appliances will have these computer cards in them, which interact with the meter. And so there may be some benefits that we don't see in terms of things that your appliances can do and things. I'm sure there will be technologies that will, people will say, wow, that's really neat that it can do that. But at what cost? That's the problem. When your entire dwelling, when your entire home is being turned into a 1984-ish Orwellian spy den, for lack of a better way of saying it, I mean, how do you know that your appliances won't be listening to you? How do you know that your appliances won't be watching you? I mean, we're already there, really. I mean, look at the TV sets that have cameras in them. That
your home could be spying. And if anybody wants to look it up, you can look up, the protocol is called Power Line Carrier Communications. It's PLCC.
Okay.
Is what you would look up as the acronym. And you could read all about it.
Read all about it. Extra, extra.
Extra, extra.
Yeah, we don't want any more extra. We just want restoration. I want sanity is what I really want more than anything.
Yeah, I just want vanilla. I don't want a choice of electric companies, you know. That's one of the frauds that they put in here, is so that you can choose your electric provider.
Oh, I hadn't even heard that one.
They came up with the idea of these third-party companies. But what the third-party companies are is that they are the monitors who will, you know, if you make a deal with them to buy electricity from them, they're the ones that will shut off your air conditioning in the summertime when the bulk power requirements are so high that the utility company wants to, you know, shut a bunch of stuff down. They'll shut down your air conditioner.
Well, as long as you have one company controlling the infrastructure, I mean, I guess it lowered the prices when they broke up the bells, you know, as far as the phone company is concerned. We had more options.
It unleashed innovation for other companies to develop technologies for the communication system. Ma Bell was pretty slow.
Mm-hmm.
At putting new things on the system.
Well, there's no incentive for them to do anything different, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I you know what? At this point, knowing what I know, I really miss Ma Bell.
Well, what's going on right now is all the new technology. I love the information. I loved being able to look things up and learn. And although you do have to decipher now, we've got so much information now. We've got the reverse problem that we used to have. We've got so much, and a lot of it, frankly, is BS. And so you got to sift through the nonsense in order to find the good stuff. But I would rather have this problem and be able to use my discernment and common sense to be able to have the information and be able to look up government reports, document, and all that, than to have it the other way. That being said, though, we know, we're under no illusions as to what this internet thing is all about. They didn't invent this thing for our benefit, for the benevolency of mankind. They'd like to sell it that way.
Absolutely not.
Another thing that's coming down the pipe here is that they're getting ready to start blasting rural areas, including the West, with Wi-Fi, using these white spaces unclaimed television frequency spectrum. And you know, Microsoft is really pushing this as one of their major things. I just watched a hearing on this. They're really pushing the idea of using these TV white spaces. So that's coming. They want to get.
Well, I think they need the 5G network for the telehealth system. You know, because they need.
Well, in this case, we're not talking about 5G. 5G has a very short range, and they're looking at connecting broad swaths, broad spaces, in you know, like western areas where you know ranchers can be out on horses and watch YouTube videos. I mean, in areas where they're not well connected.
Mm-hmm.
There's some places out there that you can't even get a cell signal. I know, I drew when I was out there. When I was out there and I was kind of lost out in the desert, I was a little nervous about that because I couldn't get a cell signal. Like, oh boy, hope the car doesn't break down. Tell you what, we're at the bottom of the hour. Got a call. We'll take the call when we come back. And you're welcome to call in as well, folks. 844-646-8376. Toll free, 844-6-GOVERN. I think we're the only live show on the air now, since we're in the middle of the holiday situation. So anyway, 1-844-646-8376. Bottom of the hour, we'll take a break. This is Govern America. Don't go away.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Government America News this hour. I'm Darren Weeks. Some scientists are lauding the rapid development of artificial intelligence, but others fear their progress will prove fatal. Expert opinion is split on the possibility of AI developing consciousness, which some warn could be used by machines to rebel against humans and kill us. Subhash Kak, a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Oklahoma University, says that if robots developed a consciousness similar to ours, they would likely use human beings as slaves. The author told the Daily Star that if machines become self-aware, they will be cunning and they will bide their time and choose the best moment to take over and enslave, if not kill us. His comments come after a debate tore through the science community about what defines human consciousness and whether or not this could ever be achieved by robots. The U.S. Forest Service and Michigan Technological University are using unmanned drones to advise the Hiawatha National Forest's land management efforts. Hiawatha is located in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, the shorelines of which butt up against Lakes Superior, Huron, and Michigan, 3 of the 5 Great Lakes. The USDA says data from the drones will be utilized to maintain habitat for nearshore fisheries and migrating birds and to monitor water quality and invasive species. It's a part of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which was launched in 2010. Prisoner inmates across the West have been participating in a 4-year program to cultivate sagebrush plants that will eventually be used for the sage grouse to form cover for their nests. But with the Trump administration now withholding $250,000 in annual funding, it's unclear whether the program that operates in 10 prisons in the West will still be around come the spring planting season. Officials are now scrambling for donations to keep the program going. The program started in 2014 at the Snake River Correctional Institution in Oregon and has grown to include 6 different states. That's the news this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
the most popular movies during the Christmas season is the old favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the story of George Bailey, a compassionate but dejected businessman who is ready to give up on life when his guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes. Clarence shows him life as if George had never been born, and George discovers that for all his supposed mistakes and failures, he has brought joy and life to countless people. It really is a wonderful life, and not just on TV. Each and every person has so much potential for good, and nowhere is this potential greater than with an unborn child. This Christmas, and always, please work to preserve the wonder of life for the unborn and their mothers. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org. That's nrlc.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks. The website is governamerica.com. That's the official website for the Coalition to Govern America. Our broadcast here, governamerica.com. You can get a lot of information there, past broadcast archives of the broadcast, of this broadcast, and as well as subscribe. You can subscribe to the broadcast there. A lot of other information there as well. A lot of links on the homepage. They're mainly there because I use them, and I find them useful, so hopefully you will too. So there's that. There's Vicki's websites are there. And Vicki, you want to go ahead and give your websites out?
Yeah, my old website is www.channelingreality.com. And my new website is thetechnocratictyranny.com.
Yeah.
And my email address is eyeswideopen@channelingreality.com. And thankfully, all of that is on Darren's website.
Except for the email address. You'll have to go to her website to get that, I think. But that's okay. You can go over there and check out her information, her research, her writings. Hours and hours and hours. It's a labor of love, folks. Hours of information. Hours of digging. Hours of watching these god-awful congressional hearings and panels. They're terrible. I don't know. Sometimes if you force yourself to get started, you know, the problem, what I find with research is a lot of times it leads you to dead ends. And sometimes, I mean, it's great when you find that gold nugget, and often you will find a gold nugget, even if it wasn't the one you were looking for. But there's also some things that you listen to, and it's like, gosh, wish I could get 2 hours of my life back there. But
well, you know what, though? What I've found is that, yes, it's a dead end at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But if you continue researching, and this might happen, you know, a couple years down the road, but whatever it was that, whatever made you go down that path that seems like a rabbit hole that ended will connect up with something else sooner or later.
I think they could shorten all these panel discussions and congressional hearings if they would just quit stroking each other. You know, I mean,
well, it is
half the time they're like, "Oh, yeah, I appreciate the work you're doing there at the agency," and "Oh, you know, you did." And it's like, come on, people, just get to the point.
That's the art of the filibuster. They're just chewing up time.
Well, I think they just, I guess they would call it diplomacy. It's
no,
very annoying.
It's chewing up time because most of the hearings really are not substantive anyway.
That's true.
They are political theater.
Which gets back to my original point.
Well, so they filibuster and chew up the time so that, you know, nothing of substance is accidentally talked about.
Yeah, it's kind of like the foreign affairs things where they say, make sure you remember we're on the record. We're, you know, people are watching. Anyway,
yep.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello, caller.
Good morning, Darren. Hello, Vicki.
How you doing?
You know, I'm doing well. I hope both of you are, too. Look, when they, you're talking about congressional hearings, when they say my honorable opponent on the other side of the aisle, mm-hmm. you know they're lying. You know, it doesn't matter.
No, I don't think they're lying at all. I think they're all best buds. You know, they probably argue in these committee hearings and then go out for beers afterwards. Well, probably not beers. They're high class.
None that are honorable.
They go out for martinis and...
Some are honorable, so they're deceiving themselves. Anyway, before I get to the reason of my call, which is smart meters and smart appliances, mm-hmm. just to the cell phone thing for 1 second. In 03, I'm in Yellowstone in a large restaurant with probably 150 people, and my phone rings. Everyone looked at me, and at the same time, who's your carrier? That's what they wanted to know. Who's your carrier? So, yeah, even at Yellowstone in 03, I was getting phone calls, but they were 2 days after the people had made them.
What?
Phone would ring, and when I got, yeah, I was getting text messages that were sent.
Well, text messages I could understand. The phone calls I don't understand.
Well, the phone, well, anyway, that was the deal. Now, the reason for my call, smart meters, smart appliances, you two were talking about chips and whatnot being in the new appliances.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, and Vicki, you may be able to find this, about 10 years ago, maybe a little more, I'm watching the Research Channel, Washington State University. They got a guy on there that's all excited because at that time the technology existed to give everything on the planet its unique number. He was talking about going to Disney World, and they knew everywhere that you went, how long you looked at what you looked at. And when you got home, you waved your magic badge in front of your computer screen, and it could give you a virtual tour. Now, what I do remember hearing, and I don't remember what it was called, but their Congress has actually had been holding some hearings, and the guy was talking about smart meters, smart appliances, connectivity, and he agreed. He said, that's why I bought an older appliance, you know, like 10 years ago. And the people that were behind all of this, Vicki, said, well, 20 years ago, the chips were put into your washing machine and your dishwasher and your microwave and your coffee pot and even your gas stove, that all they're waiting for is the activation of that chip, and it'll come online and be able to provide usage information and monitor everything you do, even your old appliances. So I'm wondering, have you heard about that?
Well, yeah, I think the guy you're talking about, I think his name is Egil Millstrand or Mill something or other. He was with the University of Washington, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah, I actually do have information on that conference that was done, and that was a very revealing conference. University of Washington is... Well, actually, all the universities are, but of course the bigger and more prominent universities have bigger and more well-funded R&D programs for this, quote, innovation. And innovation is a synonym for what is really police state technology in its entirety. You know, now they may say that the chip in your refrigerator is, you know, it's really the latest and greatest thing, you know, and it'll be an energy saver for you and all of that. But it's really a spy device and a control device. It's part, everything that is part of the Internet of Things becomes a weapon against you. So your refrigerator becomes a weapon against you. Your appliances, like your washer and dryer, you know, they really won't belong to you anymore. They'll be basically on lease, because what they can do is sell you a washing machine, but there's a chip in it that says after 500 washes, this machine stops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, time to get a new one.
Well, they're talking about doing away with
the lesson.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, repeat what you said.
Well, you're talking about engineered obsolescence is what it is. In fact, I had a refrigerator that went down, and I called the guy that normally repairs my appliances, and he said, I can't fix it. Whirlpool will not give me the schematics. So the old stuff he could repair, the new stuff, he couldn't get the schematics. And,
right.
And the guy that came out to fix it actually said, and he was from Whirlpool, that it's engineered obsolescence. They don't make them. They have a life now. They make them designed to fail at a given point.
Right. And so... So you really, at the point when they do that, when they can shut down a device and tell you you've got to buy a new one, you really don't own that device. You're just really renting it for a period of time, and the end date of the contract is, when the moment that they determine it to be, whether it's 500 loads of wash in a washing machine or 500 loads in a dryer. Really, it's a lease deal, where you've got to go back and get another one.
Yeah, and they've been talking recently in documents that this is what the future will be, is that you really won't own anything. That basically you will be renting it, or because the proprietary software from any of these things are going to be controlled by the manufacturer. Everything's going to be operating on algorithms, and these algorithms amount to intellectual property that will be owned by somebody.
Well, they're
you brought up the refrigerators, Vicki, and the guy from Washington State University was really excited because he was taking it from the seed to the, identify when the seed went in the ground, and the identification, that little micro, smart dust identifying chip would be in the fruit, and then they would be able to tell who picked it, when it was picked, what truck transported it, whose refrigerator it went to, and your smart refrigerator, it's great, would tell you, 3 days from now, your tomatoes are going to go bad. Would you like me to order your tomatoes?
Here's an article, John.
You know when you consume them.
John, Vicki, here's an article that Nancy sent me just the other day. What technology will look like in 5 years? This is a TechCrunch article. As a driver of technical innovation for a software company, a huge part of my job depends on forecasting how current tech trends will play out, merge, dissipate, or expand. Here are some of my predictions of what the world will look like in 2020. And he's got the heading, Revised Notions of Ownership. Think of the things you use every day, your smartphone, your computer, your desk, and so on. You own most, if not all, of those things. However, in the future, you'll probably share most of them. We've recently seen a huge rise in the sharing economy. Not only can you stay in someone else's house via Airbnb, but you can sail in someone else's boat through a Sailio, fly in someone else's plane via open airplane, I had never even heard of this, and go snowboarding with someone else's board via spin lister. This is only the first wave. Major players like Google, Apple, and Uber are developing car technology so that in 5 years, rather than driving to the office in a car you own, you'll drive to work in a car you ordered on your cell phone that morning. If you wanted, you could drive a different make and model every day. Oh, and that office? Not only has it been chosen to be optimally located for you and the coworkers you'll need to meet with, but it's preloaded with information and work preferences. The sharing system is far more efficient as it enables resources to be active 24/7 rather than just when we're personally using them. And because everything will be tailored to our needs and desires, we'll still feel like what we're using is quote-unquote ours.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Well,
yep.
This is a doing away with all property rights.
What it brings to mind is the 1960s welfare Cadillac, where four people go in and buy a car, and they use it on different days of the week. And it's smart people. I tell you what smart people are doing. They're buying 60-year-old coffee pots, you know, coffee pots from the 40s and 50s that are still working. They're buying old radios that are still working. They're buying old washing machines that are still working, whether it's a wringer washer or what have you. They're buying old technology because at that time it was built to last. These things are still working.
I kept the same washer for over 20 years before I finally ended up getting rid of it because it finally croaked. The only thing I had to do within that 20 years is take it apart and put a belt on the thing.
Anyway, that's what I had. I don't want to hog the time, but you know, the old stuff works. The old potbelly plug-in percolators, they still work.
And they made better coffee than these drip things, too.
Yeah, that's what I had anyway. Thank you both.
Hey, thanks, John.
I hate to end the old year saying how miserable it is, but we're going to look back at this, guys, and we're going to say, do you remember the good old days back in 2017?
Yeah, it seems to be that way.
Because it's not going to get any better.
I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Take care, both.
Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate
you next
call.
Year.
Yep. Happy New Year. Continuing with this article for just a minute, Vicki. He has a heading of Mind Power. In the past, we relied solely on keyboards to control our devices. Then speech recognition technology came along and now has improved to the point where we don't have to touch our gadgets if we don't want to. The next logical progression is mind-controlled technology. Scientists have already developed prosthetics that amputees can operate with their brains. A new wireless transmitter allows paralyzed patients to control their TVs, computers, and wheelchairs with their thoughts. In the future, he says, I believe these brain-computer interfaces will be universal. Rather than say, hey Siri, you'll think, hey Siri. Some of the most promising players in this area right now include Emotive, a bioinformatics company using EEG technology to develop brain-computer interfaces, and BrainGate, a research team that's created a wireless transmitter for paralyzed patients. Furthermore, the Federal Institute of Technology has developed shared controlled technology that augments EEG and gives paralyzed people even more mobility with their wheelchairs. Brain,
you know,
computer interface.
I think that is awesome technology for people that are paralyzed.
Right.
You know, until such time as the, you know, medical science can figure out how to repair their spinal cord.
Well, they want to make everybody paralyzed.
That's the next best thing. Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, do we really need a all pervasive system like Siri in our home, you know, that is doing things for us? I mean, talk about turning people into just nothing but non-thinking vegetables.
Pods.
Yes, pods of workers.
Pods of worker bees.
Pod people.
Pod people. Writing that one down. Let's see. There's some other good stuff in this. Let me just continue here for a moment. Right now, there's a lot of excitement about the Internet of Things. We're connecting everything. Your thermostat, your refrigerator, your car, your garage, your garden. Your garden? Really? I hadn't heard about this.
Oh, that's what I was going to tell you. The system that he mentioned, you know, where they'll keep track of everything. That system was called From Farm to Table.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of Farm to Table.
Yeah, and I found out about it quite a number of years ago when there was, let's see, I forget what that guy's name was, who was the secretary of HHS. But they wanted to be able to track everything, you know, from where it was grown and then, you know, who consumes it ultimately. But part of that was the NAIS animal tracking system.
National Animal Identification System.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted farmers and ranchers to RFID chip every animal that they owned.
Yeah.
So that they could.
And it was very expensive. The small producers couldn't afford it. The big producers can afford anything, but they can also buy their way around a lot of the regulations, as I recall.
Well, they did, and the large cattlemen could buy one RFID tag for the whole herd, but the small ranchers would have to buy one for each animal.
Right, that's what it was, and I recall...
The small guys subsidized the system for the big guys.
Yeah, and that tells you exactly who wrote the program.
Sure. Yep. Mm-hmm. But in this legislation, in this plan, do you remember the American Community Survey?
I do, yeah. Actually, I do.
More.
This North American Union, wasn't it the census that was administering that?
Yeah, and they were mm-hmm. trying to make people believe that you had to fill it out just as if it was a census document.
Right.
But the American Community Survey was for residential people, but they had a similar survey for farmers.
Mm.
And they wanted to know in this survey every plant you had on your property.
Wow.
Every plant that was...
I wouldn't even know what every plant I have on my property is. How would you know?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess you'd have to hire, if you're a farmer, you'd have to hire a high-priced
expert
consultant, you know, to come tell you.
Yeah, this is really...
I still have that stuff on my old website. If anybody's interested in it, I just do a search on the term agriculture and see what you can find out there.
He says in this article, we're connecting everything. That means lots of sensors and meters. We'll be measuring, tracking, and analyzing even more than we already do. But in 10 years, as it matures, we'll see this connected ecosystem simplify. Rather than gauging if the toilet has enough water, can you believe this? The soap bottle is full enough, and the lights are the perfect level. Your smart bathroom can ask, how was your visit? Yeah, that's what I want.
Okay.
That's what I want. I want my bathroom talking to me. You can say good or perhaps bad. There wasn't enough soap. That eliminates the need for so much tracking and makes the experience feel more human. Oh, yeah. Yeah, my bathroom talking to me makes it feel more human. I don't want my bathroom to be human. Thank you very much. Ultimately, our devices will rely on our feedback just as much as our data. Do you want your bathroom? I mean, let's face it. The bathroom's a very intimate place. I don't think I want anything smart in there.
But you'll never run out of toilet paper ever again.
I don't know. Does it say it's going to replace the toilet paper roll for me?
Well, that's the next step. It could do an automatic order. And, you know, I'm sure the grocery stores will have delivery systems set up.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way that the store inventories work now, you know, where when you pick up an item off of the shelf and you pay for it, it decrements the inventory of the store and checks the warehouse inventory, and it goes clear back up the supply chain if... checking to see what needs to be done to replenish that item.
Yeah, senior members apparently of the Institute for Electrical and Electronics Engineers are among those calling for a more social IoT or Internet of Things. Thanks to the relative ease.
That means I don't know how you get more social than what they're planning on.
I don't want any more social. I mean, the more social we get, the more antisocial we get. I mean, it's technologically social.
Antisocial at this point.
Well, you know, the thing is that people don't know how to behave themselves anymore. We've talked a lot about this on the program. The more down this technological road people get, the more insane they get. Thanks to the relative ease of travel and the ubiquity of social and communications apps, We already live in a globalized world. The challenge is taking a global presence and adapting it to each region. In the future, everything will be glocal. Glocal. G-L-O-C-A-L. A localized version of the global trend. A current example of this is playing out with the Uber in India. Because Indian consumers tend to care more about getting to their destination for a good price rather than in style, Uber launched a rickshaw on demand service in Delhi. Oh my gosh! A rickshaw. And to get around government regulations, Delhi users can pay for their rides in cash. 5 years from now, companies will have to go glocal if they want to survive. And they talk about virtual reality here. Maybe we'll touch upon that briefly when we get back from the break. And then we'll put this to rest and move on to other things. But this is the future, ladies and gentlemen. As we're going into 2018, examining where we are, taking inventory of the world around us right now and what we have to look forward to, the future is not looking terribly good for our offspring, I'm afraid to say. Anyway, bottom of the hour, or top of the hour now, and we'll take a break. Hour number two of Govern America is straight ahead.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is the second hour of Govern America. Vicki Davis is here. I'm Darren Weeks as we continue on here on this 30th of December 2017, the eve of New Year's Eve. So that would be the New Year's Eve Eve, right? Is that how that works?
Oh, yeah.
Two more days.
The eve of the eve.
Tomorrow's the final day of 2017. Hard to believe. goes by very quickly. I'm sure 2018 will be as well. And then we'll be looking at pretty much the same old thing next year as well. Unfortunately, I think. We started talking about this TechCrunch article. I want to finish this up. We do have a caller on the line, so stay with us just a moment, caller, and we'll get right to you. The New York Times made headlines this month for sending its print subscribers Google Cardboard viewers along with their Sunday paper. Now you can experience the news through virtual reality in 5 years. You'll be able to experience everything through virtual reality. But VR, virtual reality itself, will have changed. Rather than being an alternate reality, it'll be incorporated into your existing reality. I think we've already have that, Vicki. It's called false flag operations.
Reality.
It's called a repeal of the Smith-Mundt Act. I think our virtual reality is already playing out as reality. But he says they're going to, I guess, do more of that, I guess. He says, say goodbye to bulky wraparound goggles that close you off from the external world. Say hello to discrete technology that puts you in an immersive 3D VR environment with an unimpeded view of the surrounding environment and a broad field of view. There are current initiatives to develop low-cost augmented pixel technology that's far less isolating. In addition, Magic Leap, an American startup that's raised more than $500 million in funding, has also hinted that its launch products won't require a screen. In 2020, after becoming non-invasive, VR will integrate into many facets of our life, from entertainment and education to work and exploration. Between new definitions of yours and mine, new ways to control our devices, new mechanisms for streamlining Internet of Things, new requirements for being local and global, and new advancements in virtual reality, we've got a lot of change coming. There's no doubt about it. 2020 will be an exciting time, he says. Well, that's one way to view
it. I'm not excited. Are you excited?
Excited in the sense that I'm angry. There's different definitions of excitement. Washington State. Hello, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. My name is Jenna. I'm calling from Olympia, Washington.
Hi there.
For taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to call in because yesterday on our Yahoo News brief, a subject that's new to us is First Link.
Mm-hmm.
As it's a big thing that's going to go across the country in regard to first response. Oh, wait, it's called FirstNet.
FirstNet, yes, yes.
Okay, you've heard about it.
Yes, I have. And that really is the Stasi state, you know, because they will have access to everything. It's the emergency 911 system, but it's much, much more than that. That's the system, you know, when you call 911, of course, they can pinpoint your location. But they can also bring up screens that tell everything about you. That's the system that I believe Edward Snowden was working on.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So what you're saying, this is a profiling type of system?
Yes.
Well, towers, broadband, it's a whole system that each state will have the choice to be a part of, but regardless, it is going to be installed. It is going to be broadband across the country, and you know, you sign up for, you pay for it or not, it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And available for, you know, all to keep people safe. And locally, we had this train wreck, and you know, all of the news coverage seemed to indicate there was a drill that day. The mayor happened to be already there. All the surgeons happened to be checking in at the hospital.
Now, you're talking about the Amtrak deal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in our next. Yeah, that happened over here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I used to ride the train a lot to Portland. So, yeah, it caught my attention. And, so we were following the conversations and, you know, the national group that came over for the investigation. And, you know, I was watching it all last week, and it just appears to be like it might have been an AI train, because they weren't hooked up to the satellite. And that's the argument going on the local news, you know, conversations, is mm-hmm. that, you know, we need to have that security, we need that safety, which means hooking up all the trains to satellites and cell phone towers to keep people safe.
Yeah.
To keep people safe with technology. And, and you know, my comment was, well, it sounds like less people are going to be involved. If
yes.
And who's going to afford it? You know, it was voted in or whatever in 2008, and here it is 2017, and it wasn't completely installed. And there was this massive train wreck. And there was some local news story where there were a group of people trying to fight this high-speed rail going through their town. And early December, someone in this group was saying, until someone dies, are you guys going to pay attention? We don't want this. It's not safe. Da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, yeah, I've just been taking this in, so I thought I'd bring it in.
Well, I really appreciate that, because now at the press conference, was there just one mayor, the mayor of Olympia, or were there more than one? Was it mayors, more than one mayor?
Well, the drills, it was just the mayor that had shown up. But the press conferences, all the things that I saw were the federal investigators, because everyone was back off. Nobody can say anything, do anything, touch anything until this federal agency comes in and does their 7 to 10 day evaluation and investigation, taking each of the trains to Lewis and McChord, you know, like removing all of the trains. So there hasn't been an update. I haven't seen a news press saying what they've found. But apparently, you know, if there was anybody in that front car, it was smashed. And I don't think there was anybody in there. The conductor and the conductor trainee were in the back of the train, if they were there. But, you know, just the lead person that was giving all of the briefing seemed to be skirting a lot of questions and just deferring to, well, we haven't completed our investigation yet. And, you know, it's a week later, haven't heard a thing, and it's just weird.
Hmm.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was very incomplete news coverage.
Well, it could be that they were system testing the their automated train system. You know, that could be what the drill was, you know, just in case. But
the actual drill that the mayor showed up at was just a community, like it was pre-planned for a crisis.
Yes.
A crisis emergency drill. It didn't have to do with a train at all.
It doesn't necessarily, but all of this works together. And, you know, what they're trying to do with the trains, it's all part of the transportation plan. Just like I mentioned at the beginning of the program, starting in 1990, they announced a new transportation system. It included all modes of transportation, and it brought maritime law on land, because combined the management of the systems together, you know, the maritime system and the land-based system, for a total seamless system. They use that word, seamless, and for all of North America. It includes Canada and Mexico as well as the United States. And built into that transportation legislation is sustainable development for the environment. Okay? And I know that the Environmental Defense Fund was involved in this right from the beginning. So, anybody that wants to research that, I've been researching it for years, but I just, you know, within the last week, put this all together with Agenda 21 to fully have the big picture of really what what it is that is driving this whole, no pun intended, driving this whole agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And it's transportation legislation.
And certainly T21 comes to mind as being a big part
of it. Safety Lou.
Mm-hmm.
And ICE-T, the ICE, Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act of 1991 was the first piece of legislation, and it called for full automation of our highway systems. It's called the Intelligent Vehicle Highway System.
Yeah, this is why people are going to be forced out of their cars, even as we're talking about trains and those types of transportation systems. You know, these self-driving cars, you know, we're already hearing stories about how they are not, they don't interact well with people, because people, you know, the self-driving cars are too careful, where people tend to take the traffic laws as suggestions rather than absolutes. And so how do you deal with this problem? The way that I think they're going to deal with it is push for people to be forced out of their automobiles, because we can't have people driving along with computers because they don't get along well on the roadways. So you can see the writing on the wall here.
Uh-huh. Although you know, with automated train systems, I'm not real thrilled with you know, trains being controlled by computers that you know, from some remote location either.
Mm-hmm. Well, caller, do you have I'm sorry, I missed your name. What was your name?
Oh, my name's Jenna.
Oh, Jenna, okay.
Jenna.
Did you have anything else?
Is there anything else? I have a partner in crime here that's writing down a little note.
That's okay.
Well, I think that's awesome, Jenna. It you can, you know, keep us up to date, you know, with what's going on. You can get my email address, you know, off of, you know, just go to Darren's website, get my...
Well, you can go ahead and give it out again.
Reality.com.
It's Eyes Wide OOPEN at channelingreality.com. That's Vicky's. Eyes Wide OOPEN.
I'd really like to pursue this with you, you know, since you're tracking it and you're right there in the area. I'm really very, very interested.
Okay, because, the side note that I just got handed was the mass casualty drilling. You know, it was disaster preparedness drill for 9/11, the London bombing, the Paris subway, and then this train wreck, too. You know, it's like these little things happen, and it just so happens there was a drill that day, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about the drill. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of drills, David Knight reported that there's going to be a second dark winter drill coming up in just a very short time. I can't remember whether he said within the next few weeks or next couple months. But
you're talking about the electric grid?
What was going on for 9/11 was called dark winter.
Mm.
And this is dark winter 2.
Wow.
And so,
where is that drill going to be?
Well, I don't think we know, actually.
Oh.
But if you, I can't remember what day it was. But if you go on YouTube and do a search for David Knight, and listen to his program for either Friday or Thursday, it was one of those 2 days where he was talking about this national drill, Dark Winter 2. And, of course, dark winter was a biological attack also. And that, and what most people don't remember about 9/11 because of the buildings coming down was that it was September 18th when the anthrax attacks occurred.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
And so...
we've got stuff going around here, that's for sure. Flus. Lots of people are down.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just read an article in the paper here that the first person died of the flu.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who got a flu shot, and she said it really messed up her arm. You know, they're giving some kind of extra dose to senior citizens.
Yeah.
And she said it actually put a knot in her arm.
Oh.
Wow.
And so.
Yeah.
Well.
And she, you know, she said that it really it affected her mobility. You know, it hurt her arm so much that.
Yeah, hopefully she'll learn not to get flu shots. That's
right.
Pretty terrible. And they're not effective because it's never good. A healthy bloodstream and probably taking a lot of vitamins and getting enough rest is probably one of the most effective things for fighting off the flu.
Right.
At least that's the case that I've found. You know, whenever I start feeling my throat getting a little sore, I try to take extra vitamin C and go to bed.
Yeah.
And usually I can sleep it off. What's that?
Yeah. That's a good strategy.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's a very important thing to watch too, is what they're doing in terms of you know, emergency planning for some kind of I don't know if they're actually talking about a biowarfare attack, but in terms of, you know, Dark Winter 2 as a drill, that's what they're drilling for.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jenna, thank you very much for calling in. I hope you'll call back.
I will.
All right.
Yeah, definitely do.
Hey, God bless you,
okay. Thank
ma'am.
You.
Yep, bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. There she is, Jenna in Washington State. Earlier, we were talking about the Council of the Organization of American States. I found out, Vicki, that they do have a committee on hemispheric security as well, and a part of this is gun control. They have the Inter-American Convention on Transparency and Conventional Weapon Acquisition, and there's a lot of documents on this page. I'll put it in the show notes. But it's pretty interesting, and I'm thinking this legislation that was just passed, which we talked about on the program before, where it's supposed to promote concealed carry. I think it was really a bait and switch, because the idea is to try to make guns more difficult for people to get under the guise of screening out people that are not supposed to have guns. And folks, here's the thing. You better be careful about even going. You know, some people are very, very adamant about going to the doctor, to a therapist, when they get depressed. You got to be careful anymore about doing that. And this is the real concern that I have with all of this stuff, is because under the guise of mental illness, under the guise, you know, limiting firearms for people who somehow are mentally ill, you go to the therapist one time too many, you might end up finding yourself on a list of banned people where you can't own a firearm anymore.
That's true. I mean, currently it's just the people that have been adjudicated, meaning that a judge has ruled that they needed to be locked up in a hospital, you know, a psychiatric facility.
Mm-hmm.
But probably at some point they will change that, and anybody that's taking antidepressants or, you know, seeing a psychologist or psychiatrist or anything like that, or if you ever even, you know, like lost your temper in public, you know, if it was recorded somewhere, you know, if you're like at a public meeting at your, you know, city council, if you...
Yeah.
You know, lose your temper, that'll be recorded, and oh no, you can't have a gun.
The thing that people need to keep in mind, there are multiple ways of banning firearms. They don't have to come out and just declare it illegal to own firearms. And I don't think they're going to in the United States.
No, it's attrition. It's attrition. Just, you know, slicing off segments of the population that can no longer own guns.
Yes.
Until they get to the hardcore.
And everybody will fit in a category. Everybody will be sliced off eventually.
Yes. Yeah, that's the idea. So that they don't have to, because they could never actually come at American gun owners just by saying, we're going to round them all up, because it would be a war, an instant war.
Yeah, I would hope so.
We're just going to do this slow attrition, just slicing off segments of the population based on, you know, this excuse or that excuse, you know, not having to do with you ever using a gun in violence, but you have the potential. But the thing is that everybody has the potential because you have a hand, you have eyes, you can hold it, and you can point it and pull the trigger. That is the potential for being violent.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they don't want. They want to be able to carry out whatever tyrannical measures they have without the people rising up against them. And I've always said, and I think other people with me have said the same thing, that when they get the guns, if they get the guns, that's when really the slaughter will begin. The heavy-handed government will come down upon the people in such a way that it will boggle the mind. You know, and the thing is that we've already got foreigners here. We don't know who these people are that are coming into our country. We got Mexican drug cartels in the country, you know, on the border, and inside the country right now, we talked about beheadings that have already started to happen here in the United States. The last thing in the world we need is to have our liberty teeth removed from us, just to protect from foreign invasion, to protect from the communist Chinese coming over here, as they are already here anyway right now. But we could have
all over us.
We probably have plainclothes Chinese military throughout this country right now. And in fact, I don't have any doubt whatsoever that that's the case. If China hasn't taken advantage of that, then China's falling down on the job. Because when you can buy your way in, you can buy your way in permanent residency for your people. This EB-5 visa program is the biggest act of treachery that our Congress could ever have implemented. It's outrageous that they would pass something like that.
And the money goes to a zone which turns out to be like a port authority. And that port authority becomes the Stasi system that monitors and controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
The fusion center systems.
When is the Bundy's next hearing? Is that January 8th?
I
Do you remember?
Don't really know for sure.
Okay, I got to find that. It's coming up, I know that. And let's see. Bundy trial. But anyway, the more information keeps coming out about that. Unsealed motions, the Oregonian has unsealed motions in Nevada Bundy case, details prosecution's violations. Apparently, Ryan Payne's lawyers, they say, ask prosecutors for copies of all threat assessments prepared before the April 2014 standoff between Clive and Bundy's supporters and federal officers trying to impound Bundy cattle for years. And prosecutors characterized the defendant's continued push for the assessments as another in their long list, quote, long list of frivolous and vexatious pleadings, unquote. Prosecutors didn't turn over the assessments to Payne, Bundy, and other, you know, Bundy's two sons, Ammon and Ryan, until the four were in the midst of the trial last month and a government witness under cross-examination acknowledged familiarity with one of the reports. See, that's what we talked about. It came out in the trial that these things existed, which when the government on the prosecution side were claiming that it wasn't, they didn't. So the threat assessment by the FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit, the Southern Nevada Counterterrorism Task Force, FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, and Gold Butte Cattle Impound Risk Assessment found that the Bundys weren't likely to use violence. All of that was covered up. The snipers, the camera surveillance, all of that was covered up. And the fact that these adolescents at the agency were going around doing everything they could to try to railroad these people into prison, in addition to acting, you know, basically holding kill lists and trying to provoke, you know, acting as provocateurs every step of the way. They wanted a war.
They want the Bundys out of business. They want the Bundys property because the Bundys property is right on the Canamex.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard Clive and Bundy say one time, or maybe it was Ammon, that this whole harassment of the Bundy family began in 1992. Well, 1991 was when they passed the legislation for the intermodal transportation system with the idea of linking an infrastructure between Mexico and Canada, and one of the first routes that was designated was the Canamex.
You know, I think it's squashing this Bundy trial. I just put Bundy trial in there, and nothing comes up in its news section.
Really?
Which really is surprising to me. That should be at the top of the list.
That's really surprising.
I put Bundy trial in the Google News. I'm talking about news.google.com. That's where you go for your aggregator. And I get Erica Garner, activist and daughter of Eric Garner, dead at 27. How does that have anything to do with the Bundy trial? And then the next item is Iran's government warns of illegal gatherings after protests. How does that have anything to do? Then there's how the Russia inquiry began. Police kill a man at his home while responding to a fake call. Where's it's like they scrubbed it.
I bet they did. I bet they probably did.
They don't want people to know what's going on. You know what? It's very apparent why. This, folks, we are living in Orwell's world. This is the memory hole that we're seeing play out right before our eyes. This is remarkable. Unbelievable. But not really. It's not really unbelievable at all, is it? All right, we're at the bottom of the hour. Stay with us. This is Govern America. Don't go away.
Dr. Shami, I come seeking your wisdom.
My wisdom is this. It doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you are sincere in your belief.
Oh, you are so wise.
Yes. Now, why are you carrying a 2x4?
Oh, I'm a member of the religious wood bonkers, and we believe that if you hit a person on the side of the head with this holy 2x4, they will feel nothing but pleasure and go immediately to heaven.
You believe that?
You said believing is all that matters.
Yes, I did say that.
In fact, let me send you to heaven.
Hold on.
You're not supposed to duck.
Wait a minute. There are physical laws.
Quit ducking.
And one of those laws is that if you hit a person on the head with a 2x4, they will experience a lot of pain.
Wait. If there are physical laws to obey, then there must be spiritual laws to obey.
Now, I didn't say that.
Which means I may have to be concerned about truth. I may even have to examine if Jesus was who he claimed to be, which means reading the Bible.
Well, now, let's not get rash.
Another message from Lifeline Productions, the comic strip of radio, at lifelinepro.com.
The Government America News this hour. I'm Darren Weeks. Genetically engineered super horses could be born in 2019 after a genetic breakthrough by a laboratory that has previously cloned polo ponies. Using gene editing technique CRISPR, scientists could create faster and stronger racehorses, and they've already created a healthy embryo. Under current rules, the genetically enhanced animals could be allowed to compete at all international events, including the Olympics. Horses now follow after mice, rats, pigs, goats, and sheep to receive genetic restructuring. Many worry that such changes could eventually contaminate the entire planetary gene pool since man-made changes to DNA are passed down to offspring. Winning wars with computer algorithms and artificial intelligence were among the topics that Defense Department intelligence officials discussed during a recent Defense One Tech Summit. An exhibit entitled Innovations in Defense, Artificial Intelligence, and the Challenge of Cybersecurity featured a team who built the Mayhem Cyber Reasoning System. Drew Cooker is chief of the Algorithmic Warfare Cross-Function Team in the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He said that by the end of the calendar year, the department will field advanced computer algorithms onto government platforms to extract objects from massive amounts of moving or still imagery. He says people and computers will work symbiotically to increase the ability of weapon systems to detect objects. California ranchers will need a prescription from a veterinarian to administer antibiotics to cattle, sheep, and other livestock starting in January. University of California Farm Advisor Dan Micon works with ranchers on livestock production in the Sierra Foothills. He says food animal vets are increasingly rare and that the new law could pose a challenge for California livestock ranchers in places where vets are few and far between. That's the news this hour. I'm Darren Weeks.
Did you hear?
What?
There was another burglary last night, just down the street, and the family was home sleeping.
Scary. You ever thought about buying a gun?
Yeah, but I'd worry about my kids. You hear about all these gun accidents.
Accidents do happen, it's true. But the fact is, less than 200 children die in gun accidents every year. Far more children accidentally drown or get killed riding bikes. And thousands of children die in car accidents every year.
Ooh, talk about scary.
And according to the statistics, people who own guns, parents like you and me, prevent over a million violent crimes every year and save countless lives.
Wow. Do you own a gun?
Yeah, I do.
Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website, and TheTechnocraticTyranny.com is Vicki's website, and you can get to her other website from there. My email address is radio@GovernAmerica.com, radio@GovernAmerica.com, and Vicki's website or email is eyeswideoopen@ChannelingReality.com. This is remarkable that this you can put it in the search term, and it's not even coming up now. I go to Bing. It comes up for Bing. It's fascinating that they just seems to have it's just all gone down the memory hole now.
That's amazing.
Well, it's amazing that it's so in your face anymore. The censorship of the web is so in your face. It's just not even. It's just remarkable. Nothing is hidden anymore. They are doing the best they can now to try to full-scale, it's a full-scale press, to try to put the genie back in the bottle now because they can't deal with the fact that we're killing them with the information.
Yep. It's all, people are putting all of the pieces together and, well, it's like me, you know, connecting up the transportation system with Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I already had the technology piece of that. So, I mean, that's like, you know, filling in a major piece of the puzzle. Because the question was, you know, always, how did it happen to be that a United Nations program ends up in our local towns and cities?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because it's coming by way of transportation legislation, and that was initiated by Clinton, you know, with his President's Council on Sustainable Development. They established an integrated interagency central planning function.
Mm-hmm.
And so You have the major big plan for transportation in the United States that they conceived for a fully technologically enabled highway system, and then they've broken it up into pieces and parceled out pieces of it to the different agencies of government that are fed down into your local communities through grant programs, and along with, you know, here's what the plan is, and in your local community, all of these plans come together. You know, the transportation, the energy, the land use planning, the emergency management system, you know, FirstNet.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes together in your city, but it's coming from different agencies of government in different grants.
I like how they call it a net. FirstNet.
Yeah.
It's like you're getting
net
caught in
the
net.
The people.
Just like they call the World Wide Web a web.
Yeah.
They tell you exactly what the whole purpose really is. It's to entangle you.
Yeah, capture you.
Mm-hmm.
So that people will be like animals in the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these watchers will be watching everything that you do. From the moment you're born till the moment you die.
Cradle to grave tyranny.
Yes.
Absolutely. One other thing that I wanted to say about the Bundy thing real quick. I was glad to see that former Congressman Bob Barr, he's former congressman, isn't he? He's no longer in there, is he?
Yeah, he was a member of Congress.
He's not anymore, though. Anyway, he's calling now for Jeff Sessions, well, Trump, to tell Jeff Sessions, to instruct him that he should stand down on the prosecution of the Bundys. He wrote a piece in townhall.com. And so that's one thing I think more people of prominence would do, would serve the country well to come out and do similar things. Enough is enough. Time to call off the dogs, Trump. It's time to call off the dogs, and while you're at it, pardon the Hammonds as well.
Right, because the same thing happened to the Hammonds.
Well, that's what the whole Mile Here thing was about.
Yeah. I'm sure that they wanted his ranch, you know, for part of a mitigation area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because in these environmental plans, they have to have environmental mitigation areas, you know, corridors, like wildlife corridors. And the Burns, Oregon, is actually part of a plan for a new interstate highway, a new transcontinental highway called Interstate 11.
Mm-hmm.
That goes from Las Vegas to Reno and then north to, through Oregon, and it just coincidentally, but not really, happens to go through Burns, Oregon, through John Day, up through Washington State, up to Canada.
There you go.
And that's U.S. 395 for anybody that wants to look. I'm putting maps together. So.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, this whole unification of the Americas and what is the NAFTA renegotiation going to bring us? That's the real question. Hopefully we do pull out of NAFTA. But I got a feeling even if we do, the thing, it will be piecemealed into other agreements one way or the other. We're going to end up getting stuck with something even worse than what we have now. And I hate to be negative and look at things darkly all the time, but I guess my cynicism is based upon experience. I've seen this stuff happen over and over again. We think we've won something, and then, no, sucker, you just fell for it again.
Yeah.
You know, so now I tend to not fall for these things.
The whole idea of the free trade area is a nation cannibalizing system. They mm-hmm. are trying to eliminate the United States as an organization, as an organizational structure for government.
Yeah. That's the New World Order, ladies and gentlemen. All the people that talked about the New World Order years ago were all crackpot conspiracy theorists, and now look around us and see what we have today. That's why, you know, anybody who says, oh, you're a conspiracy theory, you can counter them with saying, you're a moron. I'm sorry to be antisocial, but
when I first started researching the NAFTA, it was because the NAFTA superhighway, you know, everybody was saying that's a conspiracy theory. The North American...
Despite the fact that we had the maps that were produced by the people that were implementing it themselves.
Yeah, we found all the pieces, and of course, as soon as we find all the pieces, then they, guess we were doing that, you know. So, but
and then they changed the name of the thing. They changed the name, they changed the websites, anytime anybody calls anybody's attention to it. And then it's like all of a sudden, oh, well, we killed the idea. It's all, you know, we're not doing that anymore. And yet, in the meantime, in the background, the Obama administration picks up where George W. Bush administration leaves off, and they continue to enter into all these agreements for merging the different agencies and, different infrastructure projects that they have all these agreements behind the scenes that they're working on. So, yeah, they killed it. Uh-huh.
Well, it's like you can trace the transportation legislation, you know, beginning in 1991 with the ICE-T Act of 1991, and you'll find everything, you know, the plans for the whole thing, and the infrastructure plan to this very day is still building this new transportation system. You know, you don't rebuild a transportation system in the 4 years of a presidency. It took to build the interstate. They passed the legislation for it in 1956, and they finally declared it complete. I think it was 1990. It may be 1990 or 1995, but they were talking about it being complete in 1990. And that's when they initiated the new plan,
yeah.
You know, for fully automated everything. It's bankrupting our country because this technology, you know, while your desktop computer is real, it's a cheap thing, you know. But when you're talking about putting sensors and all of these towers and computer systems and people monitoring those systems on every aspect of everything that moves, keeping track of everything that moves.
How can people not realize that we are living on a prison planet? You know, when you are in prison, I mean, thankfully you haven't been and I haven't been, and hopefully that won't be the case, but when people are in prison, they are monitored, they are watched, they have towers all around. And it's heavily surveillance. You know, you can move about, I guess, you know, to a certain extent in the prison complex when you're outside your cell. You know, I mean, the difference there, though, is that at least you know you're in prison. Out and about, what they are building literally is a prison planet. They are building...
So, yeah.
Surveillance everywhere, and while you may have the illusion that you're free to move around, the illusion that you're free to do what you can, you want to do, the reality is you're being restricted by technology every step of the way. And
they're combining the surveillance data of your movements outside. You know, the image of your license plate when you're at an intersection, and your driver's license and registration and all of that stuff, and the movement, you know, where you went when. They're combining that data with data that they can collect from you from other systems, which include, you know, the systems in the state, your birth records, your credit records, your school records, your military records, if you have military records, combining all of that, plus combining it with all of the social media data that they collect on you, where they're putting together profiles of who you are.
Yeah, the people freely give them, by the way.
What your interests are. When you go search for something on the internet, you know, that goes into your profile, and then suddenly you start seeing ads pertaining to that thing that you were searching on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like for the last week, I keep getting this ad for smart ports, you know, because I was doing searching on ports and smart ports. And so this ad, you know, just everywhere I go, this smart port ad pops up.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so, it is truly a prison planet.
Yeah.
But the thing is that we are in the early stages of it.
Yes.
That's the truly frightening, terrifying thing about all of this, is that we are in the early stages of it.
Yeah, and anyway, moving along here, in the interest of time, the stock market has been soaring. We've set I don't know how many records this year, and I guess we're supposed to believe that everything is fixed now. The economy is roaring back. But beneath the facade of everything being great, and look, you know, we got a robust, roaring economy here, we see there is a number of stores that have gone on, you know, closed down in 2017. In fact, nearly 7,000 store closure announcements have been made this year. And that's up more than 200% from a year ago. Now, there's a few of these, maybe quite a handful of them, that made poor decisions. But when I see this number of stores in a supposedly robust economy, you got to ask yourself some serious questions, people. You know, things like, oh, I don't know, what about consumer spending? You know, because that's all we are anymore. We're just a bunch of consumers. A larger than average slew of retail bankruptcies and stores, CNBC says, being shuttered rocked the industry this year, making headlines and dragging even some of the better performing companies such as Home Depot, TJ Maxx, and Costco down with the dismal news. So far in 2017, 6,985 store closure announcements have been made. Now, I guess this isn't just the store closures. This is just the announcements. According to a tracker from FGRT, formerly Fung Global Retail and Technology. Now, that's up more than 200%, as we said a moment ago, based on the firm's findings. This FGRT's Deborah Weinswig wrote in a note to their clients, store closures are a major theme in U.S. retail, as many overspaced retailers are reacting to the migration of sales online by closing physical locations. Now, they claim that that's what the case is, that people are moving to sales online. I'm not sure I'm buying all of that. No pun intended.
I'm not sure either. I bought a top online from what I thought was a good brand. That top is so thin. It's like a T-shirt that is, you know, 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's how thin the material is. And I paid like $40 for it or so. So I'm not sure. I'm not going to be buying stuff online because they just keep, you know, slicing at the quality of things. And it's a real hassle, you know, when you buy something online, especially items of clothes or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a real hassle to send it back.
Yeah, there's at the top of the list here, there's a big list of these things. Radio Shack, one of my favorites, because whenever I need something, you know, like a plug or an adapter, something, it's very convenient to go to the local Radio Shack. And we had ours close here. There was first the one location closed. Well, then I was able to go to the other location. I think that one's now closed too. 1,470 stores closed. Payless. You know, you're talking about buying clothing online. Well, I've never bought shoes online because you have no idea how they're going to fit, just like you were saying. So why would you buy shoes online? See, they're shifting all this. This is a convenient scapegoat. The internet is a very convenient scapegoat to explain away all of these closings. But the Payless closed 700 stores. There's something called Rue 21. They closed 400. Ascena Retail, 400. Sears and Kmart, 358. I don't know how long Sears and Kmart are even going to be around. Or actually, have they closed? No, they still got some locations open. But for how long? That's the question. Jim Burry, 330. The Limited, 250. H.H. Gregg, 220. GameStop, 190. BB Stores, 180. Wet Seal, 181. Crocs, 160. JCPenney, 138. Vitamin World, 124. BCBG, 120. American Apparel, 110. Goldman Stores, 101. Charmin Charlie, 100. Michael Kors, 100. Macy's, 100. The Children's Place, 100. Dollar Tree. Dollar Tree, Vicky. Dollar Tree. Are you telling me you're buying dollar things online? But they've closed 74.
Wow.
Aerosols, 74. The Gap, 70. Staples, 70. CVs, 70. Aaron, 70. MC Sports, 68. They closed our location here. Perfumania, 65. Alfred Angelo, 61. Guess, 60. Styles for Less, 55. Chico's, 50. Book World, 45. Lucy Activewear, 44. J. Crew, 40. Lululemon Athletica, 40. Eastern Outfitters, 36. Gander Mountain, 32. Benny's, 31. True Religion, 27. Ralph Lauren, 23. Walmart, 19. Even Walmart's closing stores. Neiman Marcus, 10. I hear Neiman Marcus, by the way. I heard an analyst talk about them. Look for them to close a lot more next year in 2018.
Well, that's...
They got a lot of debt. They got billions of dollars worth of debt. Urban Outfitters,
well,
8.
People that shop at Neiman Marcus are upscale. That's an upscale store. So I don't think that they're buying online.
No, probably not. And you know, to be fair, some of these probably are affected by a lot of online sales. I think Amazon had record numbers this year. And, of course, they're not the only online game, but that they do a lot of retail, a lot of things you can buy on Amazon. But I think what we have here is a massive, you got a number of different people who are hurting, increasingly hurting. They've never recovered. We're moving toward the technocratic economy where automation, robots, various technological things are taking jobs away. And these robotics, robotic systems, for lack of a better way of saying it, are moving in on people, on real people's jobs. And that's in addition to all of the outsourcing that has taken place. Here we see from Daily Mail, welcome to Skid Row 2017. Shocking scale of homelessness in downtown L.A. is exposed in footage showing sidewalks lined with dozens of tents and deprived area where 20,000 people live on the streets. You got more, you know, and they got all kinds of pictures.
You know,
yeah.
I saw an area just like that in Anaheim, California. It was all, but it was all refugees. It was like a little Mogadishu or something, you know.
Yeah, and they're importing more and more foreigners here, and that's the other aspect of it. It drives me absolutely up the wall when I hear these hearings in Congress, how they're talking about, they, you know, whoa, in order to grow. In fact, I got one right here. Maybe we'll get to it today, where these dirtbags say, you know, they make the argument, we got to have more people, more immigrants, in order to have, you know, 3% gross domestic product growth.
Well, you know what? When you have these multinational global corporations, to grow by a very small percentage, they've got to chew up a lot of the remaining market or, you know, sell something to everybody in India.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that those big corporations, they should have been broken up a long time ago. And this whole idea of co-opetition, you know, where you have two major corporations cooperatively competing.
Yeah, it's called a monopoly.
It is called a monopoly. But they were doing it at their cost centers, you know, like their distribution, you know, where you have two different corporations sharing a distribution system of warehouses and, you know, transportation and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but effectively it becomes a monopoly in everything except the brand name.
Yeah. Here we see from The Guardian out of the UK. A journey through a land of extreme poverty. Extreme poverty, they say. Welcome to America.
Yeah.
The UN's Philip Alston is an expert on deprivation, and he wants to know why 41 million Americans are living in poverty. The Guardian joined him on a special two-week mission into the dark heart of the world's richest nation.
Well, he should talk to me. I can explain it to him. There's no mystery about it at all.
Yeah.
You know?
It's by design. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extraction and transfer of wealth from the United States to third world, quote, developing countries.
So yeah.
They could create their global economy. Because these big corporations in this country needed more customers to continue to grow. But they got those customers by negotiating trade agreements where they moved their production lock, stock, and barrel so that the people in these foreign countries can have jobs to be able to afford to buy the goods. But what they did is that they got rid of all their American employees. So they just did an exchange, you know, their poverty for ours.
There you go. I think Chapter 3 of Agenda 21 is changing consumption or combating poverty, and Chapter 4 is changing consumption patterns. How are they doing, listeners? How are they doing? Oh, they're changing consumption patterns, all right, because you're so poor you can't afford to buy anything. All right, top of the hour. Stay with us. This is Govern America.
Hi, I'm Steven, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on the enduring importance of federalism.
Many in Washington today have grown so accustomed to centralized bureaucracy that they think of federalism as old-fashioned, kind of like fife and drum music. Those who wrote the Constitution saw federalism as a vital principle of free government in a large republic. The division of power between the federal government, state governments, and local governments would serve as an important protection against tyranny. The founders also understood that while the federal government is essential for national matters like foreign policy and defense, governments closer to the people were far better suited to oversee local matters. As we see in the problems that result from centralized bureaucracy today, there's nothing out of date about the founders' argument for federalism.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Most people realize their body needs clean water to function properly. Pure is the cleanest water, also known as distilled water. Some frauds pushing fake science and ignorant people repeating their disinformation and half-truths will tell you distilled water leaches minerals from the body. What they fail to tell you is distilled water only attracts and flushes inorganic minerals from your body. These are minerals your body cannot process and can interfere with your proper body functions. Distilled water does flush these inorganic materials from your body and is an effective and natural way to cleanse your body. AVR sells a distiller that distills 1 gallon every 3.5 hours. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com, click on the superstore, go to the distiller, check the pricing and how to order, and watch the video explaining in detail why distilled water is pure water.
Crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, micro-FM stations all across the country, and streaming live from FEMA Region 5, this is the third and final hour of Govern America. Darren Weeks and Vicki Davis here with you, as we are every Saturday, on this final broadcast for 2017, the eve of New Year's Eve. The eve of the eve, ladies and gentlemen. That's what, two more days left to go. Actually, one more day after, tomorrow is the last day. Unbelievable. So counting today, it's two more days. And then 2017 is history. And anyway, before the break, we were talking about the sorry state of the world as far as the economy is concerned, despite the fact that everything is supposedly great. Oh, the market's roaring back, and hey, everybody's getting tax breaks, you know, at least for a few years. What I was reading about the tax bill, good thing about the tax bill is they eliminated the individual mandate for Obamacare, which is one of the most tyrannical things I've seen come out of the federal government in a long time, and that's saying quite a bit. So at least they did that. However, they turn around then, when these tax decreases expire, when they sunset, if nothing is done, look out, folks, because it's going to be a big tax increase. And this is the astounding thing about it. I've got to look more into that. But these things are not permanent. They're sunsetted. And so you'll have a short term, most people, some people still get, you know, an increase now. But most people will see somewhat of a reduction. But when these things sunset, that's the thing. And I mean, I think it's right around 2025 or something like that.
It's like the loss leader. They're giving you a tax break now, but they're going to increase it later.
Yeah.
And you won't have any outs. It'll be just like straight off the top of your income. No deductions.
And that's what they've done. They've eliminated most of the deductions. And then in the meantime, the people who did it to us will be, most of them will probably be out of Congress by then.
Yep.
So,
well, they're building this this whole big system of systems, you know, in the United States, while we have people that are homeless, people that are hungry, people that can't get jobs. Our young people just graduating from college can't get jobs. And they're doing all of this to build this whole prison system, to build the prison planet.
Yeah. In the meantime, while the tent cities go up in L.A. and elsewhere, we see from The Guardian, world's richest 500 see their wealth increase by $1 trillion this year. Ultra-rich warned of strike back as global inequality hits a 100-year high, and billions of poorer people see their earnings stagnate.
I can see it going, all of these systems tracking everything, taking, extracting everything from the regular people to the point to where you'll have to measure how many peas you have on your dinner plate. You know, like 5 peas for you and 5 peas for you. And don't you dare take an extra.
Yeah, that's a sad thing to think about. But
because your dinner plate will report you.
That's right. It's a smart dinner plate.
Right.
Unbelievable. But you're right. That's where we're headed. It's terrible. I mean, why else would they want to have refrigerators be a part of the Internet of Things, people? Think about that. Why would they want your refrigerator connected? That's to let you...
For your stove.
They can be able to look in on you. And for the same reason why we don't want to do away with cash. And I think this cryptocurrency stuff is... I think Bitcoin is a... You know, and all these other cryptocurrencies, I think they are a rehearsal. They are a practice run for where the ultimate goal is for... all of our money system is going to go. They're wanting to take us there. Blockchain technology.
New energy economy.
Yeah, and here we see from Michael Snyder, who is a graduate of the McIntyre School of Commerce at the University of Virginia. He has 2 law degrees from the University of Florida. He's an attorney that had worked for And we'll try not to hold that against him, by the way. But he's an attorney that worked for some of the largest law firms, I guess. Anyway, he wrote an article about cryptocurrency, a closer look at the utility settlement coin. The utility settlement coin is something that apparently is being looked at. Independently controlled cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin may or may not survive in the long run, but blockchain technology is definitely here to stay. This technology has revolutionized how digital financial transactions are conducted, and it was only a matter of time before the big boys began to adopt it. Previously, I've written about how the Washington Post is hyping something known as Fedcoin. But Fedcoin does not yet exist. However, a digital currency that uses blockchain technology that is called utility settlement coin is actually very real, and it is currently being jointly developed by four of the largest banking giants on the entire planet. The following was recently revealed by Wolf Richter. He says, UBS, BNY, Mellon, Deutsche Bank, and Santander, the market operator ICAP, and the startup Clearmatics formed an alliance in 2016 to explore the use of digital currency between financial institutions and central banks, including using blockchain. The ultimate goal of the project is to create a digital currency known as Utility Settlement Coin, or USC, which will facilitate payment and settlement for institutional financial markets. He says, I decided that I had to know more about this utility settlement coin, and so I went to the source. The official Deutsche Bank website says this: USC is an asset-backed digital cash instrument implemented on distributed ledger technology for use within global institutional financial markets. USC is a series of cash assets with a version for each of the major currencies, and USC is convertible at parity with a bank deposit in the corresponding currency. USC is fully backed by cash assets held at a central bank. Spending a USC will be spending its paired real-world currency. UBS and Clearmatics launched the concept in September of 2015 to validate the potential benefit of USC for capital efficiency, settlement, and systemic risk reduction in global financial markets. The project was initially incubated as part of a UBS Crypto 2.0 Pathfinder program, UBS's initiative for research and experimentation on blockchain. Now, I'm not going to read this whole article. I'll put it in the show notes, as we will put everything else in the show notes. But I think it's important to keep in mind, folks, this document that Mike Adams wrote about. He wrote an article, Evidence Points to Bitcoin Being an NSA-Engineered PSYOP to Roll Out One World Digital Currency. In that article, he talked about this document titled How to Make a Mint, The Cryptography on Anonymous Electric Cash, in which the NSA detailed the overall structure and function of how the crypto coin Bitcoin currency would work. And we also have to keep in mind SHA 256, which I guess is what the cryptocurrency uses, was developed by the NSA as well. So could they have engineered a backdoor into it? Well, it's the NSA, folks. Think about it.
You know who we have to have on as a guest is Pat Wood to talk about this utility settlement coin, because I suspect that it is part of the new energy-based economy,
mm-hmm.
Which is a change right now, and, you know, for as far back as we can remember, our financial system has been based on commodities and the added value of using those commodities.
Commodities or commoditized debt?
No. I'm talking about real commodities. You get a stack of lumber, you build a house. There is the price of the lumber, but there is added value of the labor in building a house. And our economy has been based on building assets like that. Well,
yeah, but it's increasingly being built on nothing.
What Trump was doing was moving to an assetless system. Okay, we need to have Pat Wood on because he wrote a book about technocracy. And the idea of this group that called themselves technocracy back in the 20s was to have an energy-based economy so that the value of things are measured not by the commodities that go into them, but by the energy expended.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have the technology to do that, but today they do. And that's part of what this whole smart meter and energy efficiency kind of thing is because and it sounds as if they're using this a utility coin as currency, a utility Bitcoin as currency. And that would correspond to the renewable energy credits that we talked about last week, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, just as an aside here, Georgetown Law Center on Privacy and Technology released a report, an analysis, for lack of a better way of saying it, on face scans at airport departure gates. Apparently, there are new... and their conclusion was the face scan-based biometric exit program that DHS is beginning to deploy at international airports across the country is extremely resource-intensive. But despite its $1 billion price tag, the program is riddled with problems. It is unjustified. It is legally infirm. It may be technically flawed. And it may implicate serious privacy concerns. For all of the above reasons, they say, Americans should consider whether perhaps it would be wiser to abandon DHS's face scan-based biometric exit program, which is costly but offers no tangible benefits and many concerns. If DHS persists with the program, significant reforms are vitally necessary. Well, I would add to that, though, do the American people have any say in it? And there's the problem. How do you scan it? How do you end it, abandon it? There needs to be a significant backlash in order for that to happen.
Well, if people have to understand the whole comprehensive, doesn't even begin to cover it, all-inclusive technology prison planet.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, the reason that they need to control energy, I mean, if you think about they're complaining about the energy for these scan systems, that is nothing. That is peanuts compared to electric cars.
Yeah.
Think of what kind of energy they're going to need to power electric cars.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
They're not going to have any power for you to have the modern convenience of a light switch.
And plug your electric car into your house smart meter in order to charge it and get yourself charged exponentially. If you have to go somewhere, and it all fits together. It's a very nasty situation that we have developing around us.
Totally central planning. We do not have a capitalist system, economy in this country. Not anymore. We have central planning, and they are centrally planning everything.
Exactly. All right, moving along here, we have, I want to get into this hearing a little bit, because I think you're going to, you're not going to like it. But I think the information is important. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, another problem child of the New World Order, she hosted a Rethink School Summit on the 19th of this month. Now, the people who are reinventing government, they've become very frank in their discussions about what they're doing. Nothing's really hidden anymore. Kicking us off is the Education Secretary herself. Betsy DeVos, and she's going to tell us what the meeting is all about.
The reality is there are a number of challenges and opportunities facing American students, and Washington, D.C. does not have all the answers. Government is not the best at finding new solutions to tough problems. Government isn't the best at being flexible or adaptable to constantly changing environments. And government certainly isn't the best at questioning the status quo. But government can be good at bringing people together to highlight their creative thinking and new approaches. So today we've brought education leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country to share how they are improving education for the students they serve.
Education leaders and entrepreneurs, Vicki. Entrepreneurs.
Find that in the grade schools, K-12, they're still teaching the alphabet. They're still teaching fractions. They're still teaching reading. So what do you need that's new about that?
Yeah. Well, this is a classic Hegelian situation. Because once upon a time in the old one-room schoolhouse days, teachers knew how to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, and the important subjects, you know, that matter. And it wasn't until these social engineers came along and started re-engineering everything that we had all these problems to begin with. And now, all of a sudden, now we have a bunch of children, school children, that can't read. They can't write. They can't even articulate words. They can't talk properly. And so now, on the ashes of this mess that they've created, here comes their phoenix of the new system. They're reinventing, rethinking, as they put it, school. Up next, we have Tom Rooney. This guy's a very interesting guy, though not in good for good reasons. He's a superintendent of the Lindsay Unified School District. And he's got a little story to tell.
We just hired a new high school principal. And he was in his office unpacking his bags. And while he was there and putting books on the shelf, there was a knock at the door. And the secretary said, "Mr. Hammonds, Mr. Gonzalez is here to see you with his son, Junior." And the principal, Mr. Hammonds, said, "Well, bring him in. I just started, but have him come in." Mr. Gonzalez enters with his son. "Hello, how are you? Come on in, Mr. Gonzalez. Nice to meet you. Well, Mr. Hammonds, I want to let you know that my son just graduated from Lindsay High School 2 days ago." "Oh, great. How exciting. So what's the plan now?" He says, "Well, that's what I'm here to talk to you about." So come on, sit down. What's going on? He says, "Mr. Hammonds, my son has a high school diploma from Lindsay High School in his hand. Could you give me that newspaper up there on the shelf?" Mr. Hammonds reaches back, gives the newspaper to Mr. Gonzalez. Mr. Gonzalez puts it in front of his son and said, "Go ahead, son. Read this newspaper for Mr. Hammonds, a new principal of Lindsay High School. Come on, mijo. Read the article right here." After a moment of silence, Junior puts his head down and begins to cry and says, "Dad, you know I don't know how to read." That was a real Lindsay learner, and there was hundreds or thousands of them that we failed over the years. And you know what? The traditional model, there are people all across our country who are getting a high school diploma that makes them feel like they're ready for life, that they accomplished something, and many of them are in the same situation as Junior.
This is a federally held meeting by educational professionals, ladies and gentlemen, who are admitting that the public school system has failed. Isn't this remarkable? There are hundreds. Go ahead.
When was this meeting?
This week? It was this week.
This week.
I believe so, yeah.
Meeting with the principal. You know, they in the 1990s, and this is another thing that was kicked off by George Herbert Walker Bush. Actually, the Labor Department took over education policy. And the tech corporations and people like Bill Gates and Lou Gerstner and other large corporate leaders, they got together in a private organization, public-private organization called the American Schools Development Corporation or something like that, and they redesigned the schools. Okay, so you had the very leaders of industry redesigning our schools. What do they know about children? They don't know a damn thing about children. And probably even if they have their own children, they don't know anything about their own children. But they were the ones that redesigned the education system, integrating workplace skills
yep.
into the curriculum.
Oh, you're going to love what's coming.
Okay, well, continue on.
He goes straight from talking about the failures of the present education system to giving examples of innovation from the corporate world.
Some further context of what did we do then, and what did we build? We all know this person, Steve Jobs. Now, Steve Jobs was creating the ideal listening experience. He was not saying, how do I sell more CDs? He was saying, what is the ideal experience that listeners need?
And he see, academics don't matter. It's the experience.
Created iTunes.
It's all about technology.
That's
using technology.
Yeah.
We will live to feed the machines.
Yep, exactly.
And he created iTunes. That's innovation. We know this person. He looks a little different these days, but this is the early days of Jeff Bezos. He was thinking, what is the ideal reading experience? We used to buy our books here. And now it's not just books. But now we shop for everything. Because it's the ideal reading experience and the ideal shopping experience. But you know these folks. I see a few Starbucks cups on the tables out there. It wasn't about making better coffee or more coffee. It was about creating the ideal coffee experience.
Yeah, they certainly don't make better coffee. It tastes like crap.
So what have we done in Lindsay? In Lindsay, we took some of these same things and we said, so what is the ideal learning experience? Not that it's needed for adults. Not so that it can be convenient, but what is the ideal learning experience that can meet every child at their level, ensure their success, challenge them, and make sure that they can become have academic and personal excellence in life. So this is a simple visual, because people have asked us, as we've been on this journey for 7 to 8 years, people have asked us, so what is it you're doing in Lindsay? And this visual captures it all. It's founded on a future-focused strategic design. And that, at the very bottom, that is the voice of the community saying this is what we believe for our learners. So a key part of our system is engaging our community to take ownership for the learners in the community. And when the community invests in it, then we become servants of the community as leaders. At the very center idea is the ideal learning experience. And all around those are various components of our system that we've built. From advancing and developing leadership to instruction to technology, and you can see all of those pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he talks about engaging the community. Well, that sounds really nice until the parents...
I'll tell you what that means. What that means is getting all of the employers together and all of the major employers and asking them, okay, what are the jobs that you have? Because we are going to train these workers, not children. We are going to train these workers for your business.
What it involves, I think, is the Delphi technique. You know,
well, Delphi technique is what they're using on people,
yeah.
Sure. But the system that he's talking about creating, where you've got community involvement, that is to train workers.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're living in this rural area that, like I live in, where agriculture is the primary business around here. The major employer being a guy from Turkey that used our tax dollars to set up his business, and he's bringing in Muslims to work in his factory. So what jobs are going to be for the children in this area where they're training workers for the workforce?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all school to work.
Or.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what they're outlining here. It's all school to work.
And so what we've done in Lindsay, if we've replaced many traditional structures with learner-centered systems, not all structures, but many of them. Giving a few examples, A through F grading does not exist in Lindsay.
A through F grading does not exist. They've did away with the traditional grading methods.
Averaging grades.
You do assessments.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what he says in here.
Averaging grades. Grade levels. We still have learners in grade levels, but the way we understand the grade levels is very different. The use of technology, the use of space, learning happening anywhere, not just in classrooms. Credentialing requirements. These are all traditional structures that are convenient for adults, not for adults. Funding on seat time. Politically driven governance models. Effective school boards can be very powerful for advancing learning, but ineffective school boards can also be a great hindrance to advancing learning in public education in America. The focus on limited to academic proficiency only. In Lindsay, you have to demonstrate academic proficiency, but you also have to demonstrate proficiency in what we refer to as our lifelong learning standards. And these are things like, can you persevere? Are you culturally aware? Are you an economic producer and a global responsible citizen?
Do you use the right pronouns?
You have to demonstrate proficiency in those areas at all levels, from a 5-year-old to an 18-year-old. So it's not just the academics. It's what kind of human being are our graduates becoming.
No hate.
Oh.
We are replacing these structures with learner-centered models.
There you go.
Yep, get a rope.
It's social engineering at its finest, ladies and gentlemen. Tell you what, we got the bottom of the hour break coming up already. Ugh. So take a break, get
Valium,
a deep breath.
I take it right about now.
Calm down.
All right, I'll try.
You're probably going to get more riled here in a moment. Yeah, it's all school to work, and they're going to be outlining more of that here. There's a reason why they had this meeting, and they're having it with all of these entrepreneurs, all these corporate business people. It's astounding. Tell you what, folks, we got the bottom of the hour break. We're going to go ahead and take a timeout. We'll be back in a moment. Final segment of Govern America is straight ahead.
Closed-door speech to donors, politicians, and media, Bill Clinton spoke about American gun owners. Quote, a lot of these people, all they've got is their hunting and their fishing, or they've been listening to this stuff for so long that they believe it all, unquote. And we all remember Barack Obama's 2008 comments to a room of San Francisco elites. Quote, it's not surprising then they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion, unquote. The arrogance of their superiority requires this reminder. They don't rule us. They don't give us rights. We grant them power. They don't make us safe. We pay to protect them. They don't make us free. We're free already. And as long as we have the Second Amendment, we always will be. We are America. And our politicians are only as powerful as we, the people, allow them to be.
Government America News this hour. I'm Darren Weeks. The Trump administration says it will no longer criminally prosecute companies that accidentally kill migratory birds. The decision reverses a rule made in the last weeks of the Obama administration. A legal memo from the Department of the Interior posted Friday declares that the Migratory Bird Treaty Act applies only to purposeful actions that kill migratory birds and not to energy companies and other businesses that kill birds incidentally. The Obama administration interpretation of the law threatened up to 6 months in jail and a $15,000 penalty for each and every bird injured or killed. Environmental groups are reeling after several recent unravelings of regulations by the Trump administration. Last week, Trump celebrated the opening of parts of Alaska's Arctic Wildlife Refuge for oil exploration. Earlier this month, he shrank two vast national monuments, Bears Ears and the Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah, by nearly 2 million acres. The borders of others are being reviewed under the logic that the land should be given back to the people rather than to be controlled by Washington. Now the Trump administration is reportedly set to rescind rules that were put into place after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon incident in the Gulf of Mexico. 2018 will start with a big boost, the police state. City and state law enforcement agencies are boosting security for the New Year's Eve celebration in Times Square in the wake of two terror attacks in as many months, officials announced Thursday. Thousands of NYPD cops will be in and around Times Square to guard the 2 million revelers expected for the annual ball drop. The NYPD's heavily armed counterterrorism officers will be out in full force, alongside an increased number of bomb-sniffing dogs, anti-sniper teams, and a helicopter will be watching from the rooftops. NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill said this is going to be one of the most well-policed, best-protected events at one of the safest venues in the entire world. One wonders if the new year is really 1984 rather than 2018. That's the news.
One of the most popular movies during the Christmas season is the old favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the story of George Bailey, a compassionate but dejected businessman who is ready to give up on life when his guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes. Clarence shows him life as if George had never been born, and George discovers that for all his supposed mistakes and failures, he has brought joy and life to countless people. It really is a wonderful life, and not just on TV. Each and every person has so much potential for good, and nowhere is this potential greater than with an unborn child. This Christmas, and always, please work to preserve the wonder of life for the unborn and their mothers. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org. That's nrlc.org.
All right, we're in the home stretch of the broadcast here. This is Govern America. As we continue on here, sharing with you some stuff from this hearing, and the thing that jumps out at me regarding this whole thing is his comment at the end. They're replacing the traditional model of education. That's the theme that's used over and over again at this meeting. He said that they did away with the traditional A through F grading. And finally, they're evaluating how good of a global citizen that they can make their learners, their lifelong learners. Getting back to this here real quick, in the interest of time, I mentioned again that they talked repeatedly at this meeting, over and over again, about how they're re-engineering things, they're dismantling the old system. Here he is again saying the same thing.
That is the Lindsay journey and the work that we've been doing to transform the lives of children. And we would hope that many of the lessons that we have learned, the work we've done in our transformation, will be beneficial to other school districts who are interested in dismantling the traditional K-12 educational model that's been in place for 125 years and replacing it with a learner-centered model that truly meets learners at their level and guarantees their success.
I tell you what, I got a couple of calls on the line. Let me go ahead and knock these out, and then we'll continue on with this. Let's go to, I think this is in Alabama. Hello, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Darren. This is Daryl in Alabama. What a most awesome show you're putting on today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize. I didn't catch your co-host's name there.
Or Vicky.
I didn't write it down. My apologies.
It's Vicky Davis.
Yes, sir. Vicky Davis, yes. There's so much ground you're covering here that is so profound. I was searching frantically to find your phone number. I finally found your website. So, what's happening here is the method being revealed, and I can't give you folks enough accolades as to bringing this forward. I read Patrick Wood's book, Technocracy Rising, about 4 years ago when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a really great foundation for everything, almost everything you folks are talking about today. If you really, as a concerned person, I don't want to use that word, as a concerned man and woman, parent in this world today, if you have not read that book, if you have not read it, you will not perceive in a timely fashion the ability to coalesce the understanding that you folks are trying to bring forward today in
yeah.
your picture of how this is being orchestrated and applied and implemented. I really have to, I sound like I'm one of your cheerleaders today here. The word federal and federalism, which Vicki was referring to earlier, has such a most profound effect on people's understanding and lack thereof of the system that's being used on them. I would dare to venture, Darren, and I'm not trying to make anybody look bad or feel bad by no means. But how many people in the audience or ourselves can take the word federal and actually define it? Actually understand what this common usage word is and actually define, in fact, what it is and how it controls our lives. And these are incredibly simple words, but since we are subliterate, nonverbal, mm-hmm. and is what you're pointing out, which is what they are indoctrinating and inculcating into the children, vis-a-vis Charlotte Iserbit, going all the way back to Reagan, and how they've implemented this. Well, you can't think big enough, and this thing is not an event. Everybody keeps looking for an event. It's a process, and the process is incrementalism. And I just want to throw this out there, not to bolster myself, but I go back all the way to 9/11 as an airline pilot, and deeply involved in what happened out there in the days that followed and going on. And so I approach this from a very technical, deep understanding of some specifics. So I'm not a crank. And I love you guys.
I appreciate that.
I love what you're doing.
And thank you for calling in. What part of Alabama are you from?
And he's right, you know, and a new federalism was announced during the Clinton administration. They actually talked about new federalism. And I was trying to find the page I have on it so I could tell you what it said.
I sort of specialize in federal and federalism is and obviously this means I don't have a life. And if you go back to Bill Clinton in 1999 under the caption Federalism Executive Order, you can write this down, 13132, I have it memorized, 13132, first page, second paragraph, line D, is that the peoples of the states may define their political, legal, and moral relationship
mm-hmm.
and political status. And listen, if you don't understand that there are separate statuses, not me, not some crank, not some conspiracy guy, not some sovereign citizen patriot freako, but right there, Executive Order 13132, right there for everybody to look up, Library of Congress. And what are they talking about, your political status? Now, listen, this is such a big deal. And I love you guys, but all we seem to ever talk about in the alt media or Christians or whoever, we always talk about injuries,
mm-hmm.
and we never get to the remedy. And we have to get the remedies and not injuries. The list of injuries is long and glaring, but the list of remedies seems to be sort of woeful.
Yeah.
Well.
Hey, I appreciate that. Hey, what?
The process is so big, and everybody who is an activist in the community doing research, they're all kind of focused on one little piece of it. And I've probably covered more pieces of it all told than just about anybody except organizations like the John Birch Society. But, you know, I'm only one person. So, for every event that, you know, what activates a person is one event. And so they're looking for a remedy for that one little event.
Yes, ma'am.
And
yes,
so,
you're so right. Yes. Yeah, Darren. This Vicki here just nailed it. Yeah, that's beautiful. That is so simply and succinctly said. And so what we have to do is understand that it's like a cancer cell, you know, it metastasizes. It's just not one event. It's all these other things that link into it to tie into what you were talking about, WWW and gematria, that comes back to 666, blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but this is all interconnected. It's a web. It's a mesh. It's simply this. You are entangled through your entrainment. They're entraining people.
Mm-hmm.
They do this through the entertainment. You're entangled through entrainment. This is our entrainment technologies. And this is what they do with human animals. They're turning us into beasts, animals.
Yeah.
And they are the stewards and the livestock managers. And I know there's other callers, but I had to give you guys a high five.
Hey, I appreciate you calling in. Hey, can you tell, first of all, what was your name again? I don't know if I caught your name.
Daryl.
Okay, Daryl, that's
Daryl.
Right. Now, I'm just kind of curious, what part of Alabama are you in? Because I've got people in northern Alabama there in Franklin County, so I recognize the area code.
Yeah, I'm just outside of Gadsden, where we just had the local Roy Moore fiasco.
I gotcha.
I'm a transplanted Yankee. I came down here, but they they seem to like me. So
yeah, well, that's good. South is going to rise again, you know. You'd like to believe that.
Here we don't say things go south.
Yeah, that's what my dad was saying.
Right.
He said everything's going north.
You're going north. Yeah, it's all gone north.
Yeah.
Careful.
Yeah,
right. Listen, I'll jump off here. I know there's somebody else on the line. Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem. God bless you, sir.
Thank you for calling.
Hey, call back.
Huh.
Call back.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
I will.
All right.
Okay,
let's
good.
Move along here and go to Arizona now. And hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Darren, Vicki.
Hi there.
This is Mike in Arizona. I'm calling in reference to your last week's show. I think it was Steve that had called in, and he was making references, and there was the subject of gorilla warfare had come up and things. And it seemed to me that there seemed to be some questions about, you know, we're at war, we're not in war, and what is this, and these types of things. And I've done a lot of study about warfare. I'm a military historian.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one aspect of warfare. It's called insurgency. And in insurgency, that you'll have three main components. It would be the political subversives, the terrorist activity, and the guerrilla operations. Now, in a roundabout way, what you guys are doing is the political subversive's job, because you are raising the awareness of what is going on here in the United States. And, you know, sometimes we've been convinced by the government and the media that an insurgent is some guy over in the Middle East with a beard and a turban yelling Allah Akbar. It's a four-letter word that starts with I. And then also another misconception that a lot of people have is somehow insurgency is a strictly communist purview. And really, it's not. Those are real big misnomers on the whole aspect. Now, on the other part of the insurgent, you have some helper groups like the undergrounds and the auxiliary, but I'll say that, yes, we are in a war right now, because in order to fight an effective insurgency, the political subversives have to exist first, last, and always, and everything grows from them. That, you know, we can examine some of the insurgent groups here in the United States. You have the Crips, the Bloods, La Raza, Mecha, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and especially the Mexican cartels, because that not only the cartels, but their affiliates have infiltrated 1,000 U.S. cities. And sometimes what I sometimes see, well, the goals of an insurgent, they can be multiple, but sometimes they're there to take over the government. Sometimes they want to be included in part of the government, or with the Mexican cartels, their plan is to clear and control an area so they can conduct their operations. Now, oftentimes, people get confused because they hear insurgency and they automatically think violence and everything. And, you know, we can name several insurgencies that have happened since World War II, like an example with Lech Walesa and the dock workers in Poland, that all they did is say, hey, this is a problem, we ain't coming to work, the government shut down, and then a short time later, Lech Walesa is the president of the country, and not...
Well, the problem that I see
now,
here...
Russians tried to come in and exert their influence.
Yeah, Mike.
They were smart enough not... Yes.
The problem that I see is that the insurgency we have here are the ones that are in government themselves. They're the ones that are the insurgents.
Well,
and they control the ground movements of a lot of these other characters that you mentioned.
Actually, I agree with him that I suppose we are kind of an insurgency, and it goes back to that phrase, I think, was it Patrick Henry or somebody that said, Orwell, and telling the truth in...
Is a revolutionary act.
Revolutionary times is...
Mm-hmm. In an age of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Right, and we are in a time of universal deceit. So,
right. You
know, I can see where I could be defined as an insurgent to the status quo.
But I reject I understand what he's saying. I agree with you that we could be seen that way. However, I look at it from the standpoint that we are the government. We, the people, are the government. Under the constitutional system that was put into place, and I understand all the problems associated with we're not living under our present constitution anymore. However, we, constitution or no constitution, the people are the ones who are the foundation of this government. We are the ones who have the God-given right to self-determination. And even if the government doesn't recognize that, that is the reality of it. And so that makes them the insurgents when they are usurping our rights and stealing our sustenance.
I think, though, that you have to define the guys that have the guns are the ones that define the system under which we're living. And at this particular time, the guys with the guns aren't living up to the Constitution. So we can drag out the Constitution and point to articles in it all day long, but that doesn't make it a reality on the ground. And
I agree with you on that.
Is the reality on the ground.
Go ahead, Mike. You want a final shot there?
Governments are instituted amongst men, deriving their just powers from the consent of
consent.
The government.
Exactly.
And from the governed. And I understand the part of about a government of the people and by the people and for the people, but we're talking strictly state, city, county, federal government, and the government cannot be insurgents. They can mimic the tactics of a insurgency, but the government and their security forces cannot become the insurgents. It's the word insurgency or insurgent, it's a Latin. It means it's insurge, and it means to rise up.
Yeah.
And a government... an insurgency is not necessarily a revolution or a civil war, but when it's conducted properly, it can spark either. Now, the other thing that a lot of people misconceive about insurgency is that somehow that, well, you know, I'm a guerrilla fighter and I'm going to sit here and polish my rifle and count my bullets until I'm needed. And that's really unfortunate that those types of things happen. But it's the government and their security forces, whether it's the FBI, the CIA, the Bureau of Land Management, the city, state, county, police departments, and all the other intelligence apparatuses, they cannot be the insurgents. They can mimic the tactics. Because, you see, the beauty of it is when the insurgent takes to the field, if the government tries to come and crush the insurgency, then the insurgent can bury his rifle, put back on his civilian clothes, and go back to tending his fields. Mm-hmm. But once the government has taken the field to wage war against the insurgents, the government can never leave the field. They are there for the duration.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. I'm not going to argue with you. Maybe the better word then would be infiltrators or just traitors. And I don't think anybody would argue with me on that point. But, hey, the biggest insurgency I'm facing right now is an insurgency of time. The clock is getting in the way. And so, unfortunately, I'm going to have to move on. But, hey, I appreciate the call. Thanks, Mike. God bless you, sir. And
hey, no sweat.
I hope you'll call back.
The only way we're going to get out of this is to figure out what it is, because obviously we're doing the same thing over and over again, like a fly buzzing in the window, and time again, all the way back from Ruby Ridge or the bonus marchers or whatever it is. We keep doing the same thing over and over again. I'm a wee voice out in the wilderness trying to raise awareness, and everybody wants to sit here and describe the dimensions of the septic tank, and we're not going anywhere.
Good way of putting it. All right. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Let's move on here. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. You're on the air.
Well, hi, Darren, Vicki.
Hi.
This is Lark.
Hi, Lark.
Just calling to wish you all a happy new year.
Mm-hmm. Happy new year to you.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
Well, and just to drop a couple words into the mix, I would highly recommend Robin Eubank's blog, InvisibleSurfsCaller.com. She wrote the book called Credential to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon. In there, the reader will discover how it is, in fact, meme warfare or mimetic warfare that is being waged upon the children and upon us. And so to that end, to prove that it is a military strategy to wage war upon the people, I would recommend on YouTube, #Tyler.
Hashtag
Meme Warfare, the facts. #Tyler, Meme Warfare, the facts. And I'll place that link in your chat room.
Okay, sounds good.
But yeah, Robin Eubanks and Vicki especially, I think the two of you together would just be dynamite, and especially with Darren. So, happy New Year.
Hey, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you, Lark.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, that's only the meme warfare. That's only one front of the war. I mean, you know, what happened in Burns and the Bundy Ranch, what's going to be happening in the area that I live in very, very soon. They've started it right now, or, you know, just a few weeks ago, I guess. That is actual things that are happening. It's not a virtual kind of event. It is an actual, they'll be building, they're putting the Canamex through. And in a small town close to me, they'll be putting in an inland port. And so I expect things to start heating up here pretty soon.
That sounds very draconian.
Yeah, it's very serious, because the government, as we saw, you know, with the Bundys and with what they did to the Hammonds,
They aren't buying property. They are stealing it.
Right.
And they are destroying people to do that.
Absolutely. Well, we had a few more minutes left. Let me go ahead and get back to this hearing real quick, and I'll probably continue this maybe next week. But they had Stephen Mauney. He's the superintendent of Mooresville School District in North Carolina.
And so what we've been able to do, and kind of what put Mooresville on the map, I believe, is the what we call our digital conversion. And the digital conversion, we are one-to-one with K-12, with iPads at kindergarten and first grade, and then laptop computers in second grade through 12th grade. And we started our journey about a decade ago in 2007. And one of the biggest reasons behind our digital conversion was that we wanted to close that digital divide that existed between our students, those with means and those that did not have economic means to have access to technology. And what you'll hear throughout the course of my presentation is very similar to what happened in Lindsay, that there was a disconnect, I believe, between our students and what they were learning in education and in our schools. And it's almost like our kids had to power down when they stepped onto the school grounds. And what we wanted to do was to prepare our students for their futures and not our past. And that quote came from our former superintendent, Dr. Mark Edwards. And he really believed that technology was a way to build engagement in our kids, to tap into a intrinsic motivator that would engage them in what was going on in our classrooms. And so what started off as a technology initiative really transformed into something much more. But through technology, we're going to make instruction more relevant, provide real-world experiences for our kids. And in order to justify such a large investment of resources, capital resources and human resources into a technology initiative, there had to be academic achievement tied to it. Because many systems that we see that do one-to-ones will put devices in the hands of their kids and their teachers, and they see no real change in the instruction that's going on, no real change in the academic achievement. And then we believe that it was a moral imperative to do so. Like I said, we had to prepare our kids for jobs that we don't know that exist yet, to prepare them to achieve their biggest potentials. And so our digital conversion is really a fusion of pedagogy, digital resources, and culture. And you saw a lot of the same things in the slides from Lindsay. But it became much more than a technology initiative. And today we will tell you that it has really is much more than just a device in the hands of every child and in the hands of every teacher. It's a effective integration of good, sound technology and digital resources with solid pedagogy and teaching and learning practices. And so what we see in our district was a transformation from a teacher-centered environment to a student-centered environment. Okay.
I want to cut it off there, but he goes on to talk about how it's this transformation from a teacher-centered to a student-centered environment. In other words, the teacher has become a facilitator in the classroom, and it's student consensus that rules the day. And this is something that really was being engineered back in the 80s. We saw this begin to form in the Michigan model education curricula that was taking place, utilized here in Michigan. And so this has been a long-standing thing, and all this digital transformation and everything. I think we should pick this up next week with some of this and finish this out, because this is very important.
On the schools. George Herbert Walker Bush, again, in 1992, came up with a plan. You know, it was for training our students. That's when the education switched over from being education to training.
Yeah.
They dabbled in it before then, but that's when it began in seriousness, and it began with the PC revolution. They were afraid that, the average person out there didn't know anything at all about computers. The PCs came on the market big time probably in Well, they came on the market in 1985, but they were very, very expensive. My husband and I bought one, an IBM, and it cost $10,000.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up here.
Oh, okay. All right.
Don't mean to cut you off, but we're going to be off the air, off the affiliates if we don't. Hey, thanks a lot for being with us, folks. Thanks, Vicki. Appreciate everything, everyone out there. Thanks for all the callers. God bless you, folks, and Happy New Year. Keep your chin up.
Yeah, try anyway.
Yeah, pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it, and join us back here next week. God bless you, folks. Bye-bye.